It's your boy, The Voice, and you're listening to The Voice of the DHL. We halfway through the NBA season, and at this point, we've all had a moment where we envisioned our future. We've manifested our success, and now we see what it takes to get where we want to go. Whether it's a trophy, a belt, a ring, a banner, only one thing counts. And that's winning it all. That's all that's left to do. Walk that path to our destiny. Let's get it. It's good to be back. Hope everybody had a happy new year and a merry Christmas. This episode is going to be a little bit different from the normal show that we have. Hopefully it'll be a little bit shorter as well. There's some content on the message board for you to digest with the power rankings that were released in week 12. So check that out if you haven't already. And I know that everybody, they love to see content about themselves first and disagree or agree with the content in the power rankings. That's a judgment call that you got to make for yourself. But I do recommend taking some time to look at the write-ups for the other teams as well. I did all the work for you, so you can use it as a tool. You can kind of gauge where somebody else is at, where their weaknesses and their strengths may align with categories that you have abundance in or categories that you may need help in. And you might realize that you got a natural trade partner in somebody. So I try to do these things to create dialogue. I know a lot of you guys don't want to get on the message board because you think I'm going to hit you with all the facts and all that kind of stuff.
Nerd alert!
But who knows your squad better than you do? So if there's something that I didn't see, or maybe there might be a reason for the numbers portraying your team as a certain way, you can speak up and be like, yo, I had somebody out such and such time. Or I was playing the matchup a certain way because I thought I had a better chance of beating my opponent that way. So maybe that's why my rebounding numbers are low. Or maybe that's why my assists are so high. So I get that it's a lot of reading. And a lot of times people don't like to take that time to read. But I figure it's something that y'all could just look at while y'all on the toilet having a little bit of me time or whatever. So I hope you appreciated it. Let's get to the league news. The Suns sold to Matt Ishbia for $4 billion. Dr. Evil is laughing maniacally, finger to mouth, feeding somebody to the sharks with lasers on their head. Freaking lasers. But it just makes me think, like, why don't more wealthy top 5%ers just come out as racist, misogynist, or sexist? Like, it obvious worked for Donald Trump. He got a presidency out of that. And Robert Sarver, who bought the Suns for $401 million in 2004, is now selling it for $4 billion. And I'm not the greatest at math, but I just think Sarver 100x his money for basically being an ass. And that seems like a good business model to me. In Atlanta, things will continue to be a little messy with Travis Schlenk being demoted from the GM role. And now former player Laundry Fields steps into that role as the decision maker. And this spells disaster for Nate McMillan, who was already on the hot seat. I'm sure he'll have to the end of the season, but when he and Trae Young inevitably under-deliver, I'm sure Nate McMillan will be fired because GMs, new GMs, almost want to bring in new coaches because they want to bring in their own guys. Then there's an additional report that McMillan may consider stepping down from the Hawks head coaching job. And that just speaks to Trae Young being the coach killer. First Lloyd Pierce, now McMillan. Of course, McMillan, he's denied this, but where there's smoke, there's got to be fire. There was also this weird story that came out over the Christmas break. It was about the Knicks owner, James Dolan, and how he's using facial recognition to kick out people from the various establishments that he owns that he's been beefing with. And this is like some Jason Bourne stuff right here, because the story is Dolan has used this facial recognition to kick out attorneys whose firms he's in litigation with. And he's used it to harass fans that have publicly tried to shame him. And you can read more about it in this detailed article from NBA journalist Ethan Strauss. But the gist of the article was, if you post something reckless about James Dolan on your social media or somewhere, don't expect to get in any Knicks games. So for me, I know I don't got social anyway, so hopefully he's not listening to podcasts. But as a basketball fan, I said that I want to see a basketball game in every arena. And I got a long way to go because I've only been to home games for the Clippers, the Magic, the Mavericks, the Hawks, of course, the Pistons, and the Pacers. Before I leave this earth, I want to see a home game for every NBA team. and just hearing about how the players talk about playing in the Garden, that's definitely one of the top arenas that I'm trying to get to. And it's kind of funny because, well, it's funny and it's sad at the same time. It's funny because this dude Dolan is literally using his billions to scrape the internet for anything negative about himself and later be like, joke's on you, ha ha, can't come to the Knicks game now. You know what I'm saying? And it's sad because he's literally wasting security resources on bullshit. And it would be a travesty one day if some crazy person ever snuck into the building and execute some type of terrorism act. And then when they go to find out what happened, what the problem was, why we didn't notice what was going on, they're going to ask security and their answer is going to be, Mr. Dolan told us some fan had a shirt on that said sell the team and he thought that was offensive. Like, give me a break, man. Like, I get having that type of power at your fingertips. But you got thousands of people coming to venues that you own and you're putting their safety at risk by being petty with people.
I'm petty.
Dolan was definitely that kid when you was little that brought the basketball to the park and he was the only one that had the ball and, you know, like, oh, anybody want to play? You know, he plays in the first game or whatever because it's his ball, but then his team loses and he don't get picked up for the next game and he's like, he takes the ball and I'm leaving. You know what I'm saying? He's not even giving you a chance to run one more game. He just, I'm leaving, I'm taking the ball, I'm going home. And, you know, I know it's an extreme example. I don't think anybody's going to try to blow up MSG or anything like that. But it's like, come on, dude. You're like acting like a Karen right now. And I got this black Karen that lives on my street. She's always calling the police on somebody when they park their car even remotely close to her house. And then the police officer, he's always coming around ringing doorbells. Is that your car out there parked there? And it's like, why are you wasting this police officer's time? Like, the car is on the street. It hasn't even been there for days. It might be like the car will be there for like a few hours and she'll call the police. And it's like the police, instead of wasting time coming here asking whose car it is, it's not even like the car is double parked. It's by the sidewalk. It's on the street. It's just near to her house. And she'll call the police. Instead of wasting time on figuring out who parked their car there, the police could out be protecting our neighborhood from some real crime. And I want to give her some grace because I know her son is autistic. And maybe she does it because when a car is parked near the house, it disrupts her son's comfort zone or something of that nature. I'm just hoping it's something like that, because if it's not, she's just being an ass. And it's like, you got a Ring doorbell. You got a camera on your garage. I know you saw who parked there and where they went. You could just simply ring the person's doorbell, be an adult about the situation, woman up. And I'm sure a majority of people would have no problem moving their vehicle without any confrontation. Sorry about that one. Obviously, I needed to get that off my chest. Quick bit of league news. There are two votes on the message board, and voting closes on Monday, January 16th. That's MLK Day at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Both proposals, if passed, they won't be implemented until next season. The first proposal is to add an IR spot to rosters. My personal opinion is that when we first started playing fantasy basketball, the IR spot, it really wasn't needed because players really only miss games due to injury. But nowadays, you can go down anybody's roster in the league and players are missing time for all type of reasons. Now, the IR spot is not going to alleviate all of that. It can only be used for players that are designated by Yahoo as injured players. But with rest days, load management, being like a best practice in the NBA right now, having an IR spot disallows managers to have one less player to take zeros from, which will hopefully elevate the level of competition in the league. Like, don't get it wrong. I like beating up on Tank Stoppers because he had one guy down with Anthony Davis. And I'm going to take my wins where I can get them, but it's better to win, or I have a better feeling about winning, I guess, when I know I'm beating a competitive team. But my overall point is, I just think it's the natural evolution of playing fantasy basketball to have at least one IR spot in the league. The second proposal is called the Renig Rule. This rule is basically an additional protection to help prevent managers in the DHL from basically crying wolf. And the idea, it was taken from the comments by Tank Stoppers that he made in the league chat when we had all the commotion about the trade between Cradle and now Ontario Elite. But basically, Tank Stoppers, he asked, are there any repercussions for not paying attention to detail? And he even suggested that ad drops be suspended for 2 weeks. And the reason for this punishment being that the manager claimed, oops, it was an accident, that was in quotation marks, oops, it was an accident, causes that other manager that was involved in the trade almost a competitive disadvantage because the trade they were hoping would improve their team is now being vetoed down. So that's the backstory. That's the origin of the rule. But the rule actually reads, when a manager challenges the chalk rule and wins that challenge, they will suffer a penalty for successfully backing out of the obligation. Said manager will have their rosters locked for 3 weeks, meaning they will only be able to set the roster. But they will be locked from making any moves, i.e. trades and or ad drops. Again, voting ends on Monday, January 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Whether you're voting yay or nay, please make your thoughts known on the message board. Because you never know, it may help somebody else make an informed decision. Maybe you might sway somebody from voting from yes to no, from voting no to yes. And it's just nice to have different perspectives before making a decision. So go ahead, get on the message board, let your voice be heard. Or I guess in this instance, your typing be read. Anywho, today I wanted to do something different. And you could probably tell what I want to do by the music you're hearing in the background. And that's hand out some mid-season awards. Each NBA team has played at least 41 games. So we're halfway through the season. We're at a point now where we can stop assuming that a player's production is fluky. If the season ended today, I want to go over who my leaders are in several different categories. The first category award is the DHL MVP. My criteria for this is simple. Candidates, they have to have played at least 80% of their games. 80% of 41 games, that means a player has to at least play 33 games so far this season. So that means no Embiid, no Steph Curry.
Steffi Curry, he's driving me crazy, and the Warriors.
No LeBron.
LeBron James.
AD, etc., etc. To be a DHL MVP, that player needs to come from one of the top six teams in the standing. Meaning, it cancels out Kevin Durant, no Joker, no Giannis Antetokounmpo. All their candidacies are null and void for this purpose. So let's go over the candidates for this award. Jason Tatum from the first place team, Tank Stoppers. Luka Doncic from the third place team, UG. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from the recently rebranded Ontario Elite, currently fifth place in the standings. All these players, they've been having ridiculous seasons, but to make a decision, we're gonna have to nitpick. So starting with Tatum, is he even the best player on Tank Stoppers' team? There's an argument that Anthony Davis was that guy before his injury. And Donovan Mitchell, he kind of provides equivalent value to Tatum. Plus, out of the three DHL MVP candidates, Tatum is significantly worse from the field, shooting 46.8%, while Luka is shooting 50.1%, and SGA is shooting 50.4%. The gap in Tatum's assists and steals is also significant. Tatum is averaging 4.2 assists and 1.1 steals, compared to Luka, who's averaging 8.8 assists and 1.6 steals, and SGA, who's averaging 5.6 assists and 1.6 steals. Moving on to Luka, his major flaw is obvious, and that's from the charity stripe. Although he's making a massive contribution in the free throws made category with 8.4 free throws made, that total is in line with Tatum's 7.3 free throws made and SGA's 9.4 free throws made. So compared to the rest of the candidates, that's not really a big advantage. The problem is the free throw percentage on such a massive volume is a killer in that category when Luka shoots 73.8% from the charity stripe. And that makes him the main catalyst for why UG has gone 4-8 in that category this season. SGA, his weakness compared to others, that would be a lack of threes in his rebounding. Shai is only averaging 1 three-pointer made and 4.8 rebounds compared to Luka's 2.9 three-pointers made and 9.1 rebounds and Tatum's 3.2 three-pointers made and 8.2 rebounds. Now what Shai does that nobody else can do in this group is he blocks a shot. He's averaging 1.1 blocks as a guard, and that's a huge bonus for fantasy. But as of today, if I have to choose, I choose the man that's almost averaging a triple-double, regardless of how much negative he is from the charity stripe, and that's Luka Doncic, as the midway point DHL MVP. So that makes my list Luka, SGA, and then Jason Tatum for this award so far. The next award is Fantasy MVP. My criteria for the Fantasy Hoop MVP is much more straightforward. To qualify as a candidate, all you need to do is at least play 80% of your games. And because of that, to me, the candidates are that much more straightforward for this category. I'm looking at Nikola Jokic, Luka Doncic, and Kevin Durant. With the recent injury to Kevin Durant, that's likely going to disqualify him going forward because he won't have played enough games. So that dwindles this down to a two-man race between the Joker and Luka the Don. Both of these guys, they're damn near averaging a triple-double this season. The out-of-position stats are excellent for both players. You look at Luka's 9.1 rebounds as a guard, eligible at the point guard position, and you'll see the next closest players are Ben Simmons with 6.7 rebounds, Harden and Westbrook both averaging 6.4 rebounds. And the same thing, or same difference on the other side when you look at the out-of-position stats when it comes to assists for centers. Jokic is averaging 9.7 assists. The next closest player is Sabonis with 6.8. And the next true center would be either Karl-Anthony Towns or Joel Embiid. And Towns is averaging 5.3 assists. Joel Embiid is averaging 4.3. So monster gaps for those two candidates versus the next closest players from their positions. But I got to choose one. And this goes to Jokic for me. Even though he scores a little less than Luka. Well, he scores less than Luka. Let's be serious. And yeah, he doesn't knock down really any threes. But Jokic just doesn't hurt you anywhere. And as we discussed earlier, Luka is destroying your chances most weeks to win that free throw percentage category. And for that reason, at the midpoint, Jokic would be my fantasy hoop MVP, averaging 24.9 points, 11 rebounds, 9.7 assists, and 1.4 steals. The way things are going, hands down, these two players are going to be the number one and number two pick in almost every fantasy draft. Let's take a quick break here, and when we get back, we still have plenty of fantasy awards to hand out. Welcome back, and let's get back to handing out the awards. And you know who's saying they're right here, they're right now, it's their turn. It's the rookies. So let's go over the candidates for the Rookie of the Year. This is a two-man race between Paolo Banchero and Benedict Mathurin. And for fantasy, we got a few rookies that have been useful this year. Walker Kessler, he's been providing abundance in the production towards the blocks category, averaging 2 blocks a game. Jalen Duren, he's been an excellent source of rebounds, averaging 8.5 rebounds. Jabari Smith, Jaden Ivey, Jalen Williams. All these guys have proven themselves as fairly useful fantasy options this season. For Jabari Smith and Ivey especially, they just need to improve on their efficiency from the floor. But there's not a lot of analysis to do here. This is Paolo's award to lose at this point. All he needs to do is stay on the court. And rookies, they're not going to do everything great from the start. So there has to be room for improvement. So that's a given. Of course, as we see him to continue to grow into his position in the league, I want to see Paolo be closer to that 46-47% from the field. Become a stronger rebounder. Give us about 8 rebounds easy. But for a rookie man, it's hard to complain about the level he's been producing at. Paolo is averaging 21.2 points, 6.8 rebounds, 3.8 assists, 1.1 steals, and 1.3 three-pointers made at 31%. The next award is the Defensive Player of the Year. This is another award where I'm putting a games played quota on the qualifications for the candidacy. Players need to have at least played in 80% of the games. So I'm looking at players that excel in rebounds, specifically defensive rebounds, grab steals, get blocks, do it all. This is a hard one because a lot of our block leaders, Nick Claxton.
Oh, Nicholas Claxton? I've never even heard of this dude, bro.
And we know who he is because he's averaging 2.6 blocks this season. Brooke Lopez averaging 2.5 blocks. Or Miles Turner, he's averaging 2.3 blocks. And the problem is with these dominant shot blockers, they're just not really rebounding well or even getting steals. And similar to the guys that are really just locking down the perimeter players, getting steals like OG Anunoby averaging 2.3 steals, De'Anthony Melton averaging 1.9 steals, Tyrese Haliburton averaging 1.8 steals. Neither of these guys, they're not really rebounding particularly well, and none of them, they damn sure they're not getting any blocks, you know what I'm saying? So it comes down to guys that are kind of strong in the defensive rebounds that can be above average shot blockers and at least register a steal or at least close to a full steal a game. The best options I found were Joel Embiid averaging 8.1 defensive rebounds, 1.1 steals, and 1.7 blocks. Kristaps Porzingis averaging 7 defensive rebounds, 1 steal, and 1.5 blocks. And Rudy Gobert averaging 8.4 defensive rebounds, 0.8 steals, and 1.3 blocks. But I do have to disqualify Embiid because he, of course, has not played enough this season to reach that 80% threshold. So my order going into the midpoint of the season is going to be Porzingis, then Gobert, and I'm going to go ahead and grab Anunoby from the steals group because he's the closest to kind of meeting my standards. He's averaging 5.9 rebounds, 2.3 steals, and 0.8 blocks. On a side note, it's got to be tough if you drafted Gobert this season. He's been truly disappointing. And I thought when Towns went down that Rudy would just kind of start to look more like the guy he was when he was in Utah. But that really just hasn't happened yet for him. He's averaging the least amount of blocks in his career since his rookie season. But if you're rostering Gobert, you got to be crossing those fingers, hoping that this small pocket of production that he's had recently over the last four games will continue, where he's averaged 19 points, 14.5 rebounds, 1 steal, and 1.5 blocks. Hopefully he could turn that into a trend and close out this second half of the season strong. We move to most improved player. This is the easy one for me. It's got to be the finisher, Lauri Markkanen. The guy's having a career year, should be a first-time All-Star this season, and his fantasy draft stock has gone through the roof. To the moon! Last season, Pep, he drafted Markkanen in the 7th round, and even with the possibility of more opportunity after being traded from Cleveland to Utah, the perspective on Markkanen really didn't change in the DHL. He was still drafted in the 7th round once again, this time by Horsemen. And all that's to say, really, is that this dude, he's not getting past the second round next season. Some other candidates for this award would be a guy like Nick Claxton, who raised his scoring to double digits this season. He's upped his rebounds from 5.6 to 8.3, and he's more than doubled his blocks, going from 1.1 to 2.6 blocks. Kevin Huerta is another solid candidate. He's upped his efficiency, going from 45 to 48% from the field. As a shooting guard, to shoot 48% is freaking excellent. So shout outs to Kevin, Mr. Red Velvet himself. He also upped his percentages from deep, going from 39 to 42%. And all that efficiency has obviously helped Herter increase his scoring from 12.1 to 15.1 points a game. And that's a career high. He's also making a career high 3 3-pointers made this season. The next category is one of my favorites to debate, and that's the best free agent ad, a guy that was not drafted originally. And the obvious qualification for this award is in the title. Candidates cannot be a player that was drafted. That means no RJ Barrett, no Onyeka Okongwu, no DeAndre Hunter, no Jaden McDaniels, etc., etc. I normally like to give a little bit more weight to players that were picked up earlier in the season and were held on a fantasy roster long term. And I'm also considering future value kind of as a tiebreaker. The pool of players that I settled on in no particular order are Mason Plumlee, Markelle Fultz, Walker Kessler, Thomas Bryant, Jalen Duren, and Killian Hayes. I'll start with Fultz because he's the easiest guy to eliminate. He's the greatest source of assists and steals, and he cycled through four different fantasy rosters already this season. The problem with Fultz is he's already missed the first 2 months of the season, and his long-term hold basically just started recently. He got picked up on December 23rd. Since that date, though, he's averaged 12.8 points, 4.3 rebounds, 6.2 assists, and 2 steals, while taking 10.9 field goal attempts at 51%. Needless to say, that's a really great pickup on Fultz, and he's going to be a guy that's going to be on our roster for the rest of the season. The next player I'm disqualifying is Jalen Duren. It took him 24 games to break through into the starting lineup, and during that time, he was ad-dropped 7 times. 7 times, that's a lot. And that's because he was only averaging 6.6 points and 6.8 rebounds when he was coming off the bench. And of course, the fact that he was added 7 times and dropped 7 times, that just shows you that, hey, if you needed rebounds, you were in a pinch, you needed some rebounds, he was a solid guy to add and try to get that extra boost in the rebounding categories. But since all that bouncing back and forth from being on the free agency to being on a roster to being back on the free agency, so on and so forth, Cradle scooped him up off of waivers on December 7th, and that was right before Duren entered into the starting lineup. Since being in the starting lineup, he's averaged 9.4 points and 11.2 rebounds. And you're not just going to find 11.2 rebounds on the free agency most days. But Duren's impact on scoring kind of leaves me desiring more. Plus the fact that he's only averaging 0.5 blocks since becoming a starter, that's underwhelming. Also, he's been injured for a week now with the ankle injury, and because he's on a tanking team, it kind of makes me nervous that he can miss 3-4 weeks just because Detroit's not in any rush to get anybody back anytime soon. The final guy I'm cutting from contention is Thomas Bryant, and the guy's been a walking double-double since the AD injury, averaging 16.5 points and 10.4 rebounds, while taking 10.8 field goal attempts at 64%. Like Duren, though, I'm just really disappointed in the production for the blocks category. Bryant has only been averaging 0.4 blocks since replacing AD as a starter. 0.4. It's like, dude, you're 6'10". You got to do better.
Come on, man. I mean, come on, man. Come on, man. You're making money. Come on. I mean, come on, man. Come on.
This leaves my finalist for the award at the midseason point for the best free agent ad, a guy not drafted. And those finalists are Mason Plumlee, Walker Kessler, and Killian Hayes. So I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to slot Kessler in as the third runner-up. I think I said that wrong, but he's in third, however you want to say it. And that's due to the fact that he's really kind of still getting limited minutes. And for me personally, if I'm really going to count on a player, I like that guy to get close to 28 minutes a night. That kind of gives me confidence that I know he's going to be allowed by the coaching staff to play through his mistakes. And Kessler, for the season, he's only averaging 19 minutes a night. But since being picked up as a long-term hold on December 8th, that time on the court has been bumped up to 23 minutes a night. And also since December 8th, he's been averaging 8.4 points, 8.3 rebounds, and 2.2 blocks. And that's what I like most about Kessler as a guy that's been added off the free agency. He's dominating a category of scarcity with those 2.2 blocks a night. The runner-up for this award, this belongs to Killian Hayes. Killian, he's been taking full advantage of his opportunity with Cade Cunningham injured, and he's proven that he's a legit NBA player. I think a lot of people gave up on him. Shoot, I kind of gave up on him. I was talking him up his rookie year, and he basically shit the bed. Plus, when you look at the dates, Killian is one of the longest tenured pickups off the free agency. He's been held since November 27th. Since then, he's averaging 13 points, 7 assists, 1.4 steals, and 1.6 3-pointers made at 36%. But the guy that's the leader boxing for this award, it's got to be Mason Plumlee. This man has been playing well. I mean, the guy's been playing so well, he's been traded twice in the DHL for value this season. So he's basically been rostered long-term since November 2nd. But just looking at his last 18 games, Plumlee, since being traded to Jive Turkey the second time, has averaged 13.8 points, 10.2 rebounds, 3.1 assists, 0.8 steals, and 1.1 blocks. So we got to start putting some respect on Plumlee's name.
When my name come up, respect. Stop playing with my fucking name.
because I love the fact that Plumlee is top five in assists for true centers. Again, that's disqualifying guys like Pascal Siakam or Draymond Green. But you put that together with the fact that he's an automatic double-double and he's kind of contributing to steals and the block categories also. This guy has been a major come up off the free agency. This next award, it's not as much fun. It's for managers that are feeling a little bit salty. And that's the biggest bust due to injury. This is a pretty self-explanatory award. The four players that stand out to me the most are Anthony Davis.
I call him Anthony Street Clothes Davis because he's always in street clothes.
Drafted in the second round. Cade Cunningham, drafted in the third round. Brandon Ingram, drafted in the third round. And Chris Middleton, drafted in the fifth round. Cade Cunningham, he deserves to be mentioned, but this injury to him happened so early in the season that there's plenty of time to recover and re-strategize and try to get your team together. I didn't like the fact that when Cade first went down with the injury, that managers kind of had to hold on for him to 2 weeks looking for clarity. Detroit was trying to be real coy with what was going on with him. But 2 weeks of uncertainty out of a 21-week fantasy hoop regular season, it's not that detrimental. So regardless of how much draft capital you used on Cade Cunningham, it definitely threw a speed bump in your fantasy season, but I don't think it was a roadblock. Anthony Davis, he's also worth mentioning, but I don't think he should get this award because if you drafted AD, you expect him to miss games. It's unlikely that any fantasy manager drafted AD without baking in some type of risk reward on the potential of rostering him. The last we heard about AD is that he was a week away from simply trying to ramp up. So that still means he has to rehab, he has to do some on-court activities, then get on one-on-one, then, you know, get all the way up to actual practice. And we're likely not seeing AD until after the All-Star break for the second half of the Week 18 in the fantasy season. And if AD does miss that much time, he'll miss 31 games this season. And that's not counting any games in the future that he might miss for back-to-backs as he tries to get himself back in shape. Still, again, I think most people drafted AD hoping that he played 50 to 55 games. I don't think anybody was drafting him thinking he was going to play 60 plus 70 games this season. And because of that logic, I really don't think he deserves to win this award. Because again, I feel most managers were prepared for this possibility. So this is not really like a worst case scenario. This is kind of just what was expected. That leaves Brandon Ingram and Chris Middleton as my two most deserving players for this award. Biggest bust due to injury. Runner-up goes to Middleton. Kind of like AD, at least with Middleton, we knew what was going on at the beginning of the season. We knew he was going to miss 4 to 5 weeks off top just due to his wrist kind of recover from the wrist injury. So like AD, when you drafted Middleton, you were probably baking in that, hey, I know this guy's going to miss some time. And even when he comes back, you figure that he might have been on a minutes restriction for a week to 2 weeks, etc., etc. So, in my opinion, I think most people were kind of prepared for Middleton to have a little bit of a slow start. Now, what we didn't foresee was the whole separate injury from the wrist injury and this new issue being something that has no timetable. And this is where it starts to get ugly and where managers start to feel really salty about the situation. Because you've already committed yourself to Middleton for the first 6 weeks of the season when he was healing from his wrist injury. Then he gets hurt again, and Milwaukee's kind of treating it as if it's day-to-day. The Bucks had just kind of been stringing us fantasy players along for a month now, and we still have no real clarity on the situation or how close Middleton is to returning. So this puts fantasy managers in a bind because now you feel like the only option you have is the hold because you don't want to drop him and then find out once you drop them, there's an update that, oh, Middleton's going to be back at the end of the week. And that's just what makes this situation such a poo situation. If I said Middleton was going to be back in a week, or if I said he was going to be out another 4 weeks, both scenarios would seem plausible. And that's horrible that we get no clarification. In fantasy, I think that's what we're always trying to do. We're trying to get clarification, find out the players that we can count on and have consistency from. So let's say you choose the hold and Middleton is out for another 4 weeks. Again, plausible. Then you're saying that you drafted this player, a fifth round pick, other guys in the fifth round that went right after Chris Middleton. SGA, Kristaps Porzingis, Josh Giddey, Jeremy Grant, Wendell Carter, Franz Wagner, Yusuf Nurkic. These are guys you all could that you could have got if you didn't choose to draft Chris Middleton. And again, if he's out for another 4 weeks, you're talking about eating zeros for a guy for 14 weeks out of a 21-week season. That's rough. That is absolutely rough. And that's why I think he's the runner-up for this award. But the guy that I think might take this award home at the end of the year might be Brandon Ingram. And he's the winner at the midway point, or loser, or however you want to view this award. But he's been out for 7 weeks. 7 weeks. And we were told that he'd be back in action probably about 2 weeks ago. We were told that he was going to be possibly getting back into the lineup, that he had been to practice and all this kind of stuff. And this is another situation where the communication has been almost non-existent from the team management. And on a side note, I don't know why teams do this. You know what I'm saying? Like, just go ahead and say the guy's going to be out for 4 weeks. The guy's going to be out for a month. When you kind of make it seem like he's day to day, you kind of give the player a bad rep, because now it looks like he's not tough enough to fight through what should be a minor injury. When you list a guy like, oh, he's, you know, day to day, you're not really giving any updates. It makes these players seem like, hey, they're making all this money and they're just being lazy. If you just say, hey, this is a serious injury, he might be out for a month, he might be out for a month and a half, and then if he comes back early, great. But if he doesn't, then cool. We don't think that he's just being some type of diva or something. And so anyways, that's the worst part about rostering Ingram, rostering a Middleton, is just that you're not getting any type of real updates so that way you can make a pimp decision. At least with Cade, you were able to make a decision on how to proceed, because Detroit made it easy by announcing that he'd be out for the rest of the season. So that's an easy drop, move on, try to recoup. With Anthony Davis, managers were told almost immediately that he'd at least be out for a month. So managers, they had the option to make a decision off of that information. Do I want to go ahead and hold him? Do I want to go ahead and trade him for quarters on the dollar? You have some options. But with Ingram, we've been in the dark holding this guy with no clue on what's going on, when the return will be. And because of that, you're kind of taking unnecessary zeros, because it's too hard to assess what the opportunity cost would be for dropping him or trying to trade him again for quarters on the dollar when there's no real timetable. So the longer he's out, the larger the opportunity cost is for holding the guy on your roster, especially when you're talking about a third round draft pick was used on this guy. And some guys that went after Ingram in the draft: Darius Garland, Drew Holiday, Zach LaVine, Donovan Mitchell. Evan Mobley's been okay. Jimmy Butler, he's been injured off and on. Tyrese Maxey, Jalen Brunson. All these guys at this point you much rather have, because at least you're going to get some production from these players. Even if you think Ingram's a better player, he's been out 7 weeks. His per game value is not going to be that much better than one of these other players' total season value just because of games played. So we'll see. If Ingram comes back tomorrow, then of course by the end of the year, he's probably not going to be the person winning this award. But because there's no clarity, we don't have any full scope on the opportunity cost loss until it's probably too late. The last two awards that we're going to discuss today are the best and worst trades of the season. This, of course, is very subjective, so I'm sure I'm going to get some additional suggestions. But until then, we're going to start with the worst trade of the season, so that way we can try to end on a high note. The worst trade of the season Credo avoids this dishonor because he successfully kept Jokic on his roster after unintentionally accepting a trade offer from Ontario Elite. Another trade that I'm going to disqualify off the top is the trade between Team Proof and Tank Stoppers. I'm not the biggest fan of this recent trade, but time will tell if Proof made the correct gamble to bring in Jonas Valanciunas,
Jonas Valanciunas,
and Thomas Bryant. The two trades that stand out the most to me is Elhanson and Josh Giddey.
Giddey.
To Pepin them for Colin Sexton. And the other is the trade that Jive Turkey did, send in Yusuf Nurkic to Pepin them for Max Strus and Mason Plumlee. So let's start off with the obvious here and put a little deformation of character out there into the world. But the common denominator for these bad trades is Pep. maybe the Pep embargo in the DHL just needs to return. I'm sorry, Pep, I'm messing with you, but these were some peculiar trades, and for totally different reasons. The worst trade to me is the one involving Elhan, and you can read my thoughts on this trade under the power ranking write-ups if you really want a detailed synopsis on it. But even in a best case scenario, Sexton is just a pure scorer. He adds little to no value in any of the peripheral stats. And unlike Giddy, who's basically filling up the stat sheet night to night, if you look at the last 10 games since Pep has rostered Giddy, he's averaging 20.3 points, 7.8 rebounds, 6.1 assists, and 1.3 three-pointers made at 34%, while shooting 52% from the field on 16.1 attempts. But that trade, it doesn't win the award. The trade between Jive Turkey and Pep and them, that's the one that wins this, or at least that's the leader in the clubhouse at the midway point of the season. On paper, this is a much, much better trade than Giddy for Sexton. But it was the actions taken by Jive that makes this trade one of the worst trades of the season. And look, I don't mind trading Nurkic for Strus and Plumlee. I know some people have problems with that. I admit, I was personally wrong about Strus. I thought he was going to be having the type of year that my boy Red Velvet, Kevin Huerta, was having. I thought Strus was going to be averaging like 13 to 15 points, get you a steal, a little bit over a steal, kind of three-ish three-pointers made at a strong percentage. And at the time, Strus was kind of looking like he was going to be that guy. Over the first 10 games of the season, Strus averaged 14.2 points, 4.6 rebounds, and 2.7 three-pointers made at 37%. And actually, to be fair to Strus, as of late, if you look at kind of the season averages, he's kind of gotten himself back on track. But what happened was, because Strus, his efficiency, it basically cooled down once Jive traded for him. Over the 21 games that Jive rostered Strus, he averaged 12.2 points, 3 rebounds, 0.9 steals, and 2.6 three-pointers made, but at 31%. So again, he was shooting 37% before Jive got him, was shooting 31% while Jive got him. Also, he was shooting 37% from the field. That's like vintage Devontae Graham stratosphere right there. So, of course, he got dropped. And Strus, he ended up being a flop. That's okay. Sometimes that happens when you make a trade. That happens when you make a draft pick. It is what it is. So to me, that's not what makes this trade the worst of the season. The issue was dropping Plumlee and then retrading for the man. That's what makes this the worst. Now, in a vacuum, would I ever trade Nurkic for Plumlee straight up? No, I don't think so. I'd probably keep Nurkic on most scenarios. But let's just take a look at the stats of the two players since the trade was processed on November 4th. Player A, in 30 games since the trade, is averaging 14.7 points, 9.5 rebounds, 3 assists, 0.9 steals, and 1 block, while taking 10.1 field goal attempts at 55%. Then you have player B. They played 35 games since the trade, and they've been averaging 12 points, 10.3 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 0.7 steals, and 0.7 blocks, while taking 7.1 field goal attempts at 66%. Can anybody tell me which stats belong to which player? I'll wait. Think about it. And if you had a hard time deciphering who was who, that was the whole point of the exercise. Player A stats belong to Nurkic and player B stats belong to Plumlee. And even though most managers in the league, most managers, fantasy managers in general, would choose Nurkic over Plumlee, the two players, their stats are damn near identical. I read them to you. And because of that, I would almost give Plumlee the edge, because at least he doesn't come with the injury history that Nurkic does. Hence, Plumlee playing 35 games since the trade, and Nurkic playing only 30. And that's within the same time frame. And again, that's not because of scheduling. That's because Nurkic is missing games. So again, I want to be clear. This trade is not the worst of the season because of the actual players involved, or because the production of players dropping off a cliff on one side of the trade. I'm literally ranking it this high because of Drive. He dropped an extremely useful player. That's the point I'm trying to make. Plumlee was an extremely useful player. He dropped him. And then he had to spend very high fantasy capital in LeBron James just to get Plumlee back on the roster. Imagine if he would have just kept Plumlee on the roster in the first place, and then he still decided to trade LeBron. Cool, now you got two other useful players. Now you got a Kyle Kuzma and somebody else to add to what Plumlee's already been doing this whole season. And if that was the case, maybe Drive's not fighting for his fantasy life right now. Maybe he's not trying to dig himself out of last. Actually, nope. Actually, scratch that. That's not the worst trade of the season. Sorry, my memory's coming back to me. The award needs to go to the trade that never was. And that was the offer that had Irrelevant come on the podcast, basically lobby to UG to swap SGA for Ben Simmons. UG, he came on the podcast later on and acknowledged that Irrelevant, he even acknowledged that Irrelevant tried to sweeten the pot and do a 2-for-1 with SGA, with SGA and Ben Simmons kind of being the focal point of the trade. So Irrelevant was willing to put SGA and somebody in the trade to get Ben Simmons. And now UG's holding the bag for a guy that gets zero goose egg, 0 points in the game, and is still passing up wide open layups. I don't care what UG says. He could try to spin it all he wants. He could try to talk about, Ben Simmons is the right fit for my team, blah, 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 blah. Nah, bruh, I don't want to hear it. SGA, he's got to be a top 10 player on basically everybody's list for fantasy this season. And UG, he's always the guy preaching, accumulate talent, figure out the rest later. So when you start breaking your own rules, man, you start getting sloppy. So that's got to be the worst trade, the trade that never was. So curveball there for that one. And our final category to go over, the last award that we're going to hand out today, and that's the best trade of the season. For this award, I want to recognize a trade that I feel was mutually beneficial to both teams. And yes, there's been some really quality trades this season, but sometimes nothing beats an original. And the trade where everybody I feel walked away happy and probably still feel really good about the trade, even with hindsight being 2020, is the trade that started off the season right after the fantasy draft, and that was between Horseman and Elhan. Elhan sent Domantas Sabonis to Horseman for Lauri Markkanen and Josh Giddey. And in this trade, both teams, they got what they wanted. Horseman, big Sabonis guy. Elhan, big Giddey guy. Plus, he got the flyer in Lauri Markkanen that he had been eyeing all preseason. And when you look at how these players have been performing since the trade, everybody has been playing well, playing up to expectation. I guess you could say Lauri Markkanen has surpassed expectation, but everybody is playing and really doing what the managers were kind of hoping and assuming they would do. For Horseman, he got what he wanted out of the trade. He wanted a big to help him dominate rebounds, give him those out of position stats with the assists, and he's dominating those two categories with adding Domantas Sabonis to his squad. While for Elhan, I think you could argue that Lauri Markkanen is probably his best player. I know in a vacuum on paper, it probably should be Devin Booker, but Booker's been injured, and Lauri Markkanen has been that consistent guy for Elhan this season. And I think it's a legit discussion that Lauri Markkanen might be the best guy on this squad. Now, I don't want to rehash a whole bunch of stuff, but I would have loved for Elhan to have kept Josh Giddey on their squad. I just think it makes their team stronger in general. But even if they went back and said, hey, we're just going to do this trade Sabonis for Markkanen straight across, I believe both managers would still do the deal and walk away from it happy. So to recap the awards and the leaders at the midway point of the NBA season, we have our DHL MVP as Luka Doncic. We have our fantasy MVP as Nikola Jokic. Rookie of the Year, Paolo Banchero. Defensive Player of the Year, the original unicorn, Kristaps Porzingis. Most Improved Player, the Finisher. I gotta find Mortal Kombat sound effect for that one whenever I say Lauri Markkanen. And that's the nickname that I saw that the Utah Jazz gave Lauri Markkanen. They put him on this poster that they made for him. calling him the finisher. But anyways, that's he's the most improved. We got our best free agent ad, and this is a guy that wasn't drafted, and that goes to Mason Plumlee. Biggest bust due to injury, Brandon Ingram. The worst trade of the season, the trade that never was, irrelevant sending SGA to UG for Ben Simmons. And sometimes you just got to say, won't God do it? You know, sometimes God will close the door that you thought you were supposed to walk through, and you just got to thank, say, thank you, Lord. Thank you for saving me from myself. And then the best trade of the season, again, going to Horseman and Elhan for the mutually beneficial trade of Horseman sending Lauri Markkanen and Josh Giddey to Elhan for Domantas Sabonis. So let me know on the message board. Let me know who you guys think should have won the awards, who you think were maybe better candidates for these awards. I always appreciate the discussion. But as always, I just appreciate you guys taking some of your day to spend it with me talking about fantasy basketball. And since Giddey was a big part of this podcast, I'm going to go ahead and we're going to let Wally Szczerbiak take us out of here.
Josh Giddey's like, Giddey, 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 triple-double, triple-double through the lane, just doing whatever the heck he wants.